Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. On June 12th, Omar Mateen entered Pulse nightclub armed with a handgun, an assault rifle, and rounds of ammunition. Over the next 3 hours, Mateen killed 49 people and wounded more than 50, and called 911 to pledge allegiance to ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. The very next day, another attack, this time at the home of two police officers on the leafy streets of a Paris suburb, where Larossi Abala fatally stabbed one officer, then entered the home and killed the officer's colleague and partner, and held their 3-year-old son hostage. Abala filmed the attack and posted the video to Facebook, where he also declared his allegiance to the Islamic State. After a 3-hour standoff, a tactical team stormed the home, killing Abala and rescuing the child. In both cases, a question hung heavy on the minds of the public and the authorities. Could this have been stopped? New York Times foreign correspondent Rukmini Kalamaki examines the difficulty of managing terror watch lists and preventing attack in her article, How Do You Stop a Future Terrorist When the Only Evidence is a Thought? We reached her via Skype. And Rukmini Kalamaki, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you for having me, Virginia. It's a pleasure.
So like Omar Mateen, Larossi Abala was known to French authorities. Why was he on the radar?
Larossi Abala was first arrested by authorities in 2011 when he was just 19 years old. And at that point in time, he was part of a cell of young men in the French suburbs who were attempting to go to Pakistan to wage jihad. And what's interesting is back then, the only act of violence that they could pin on the young Larossi Abala was that he had killed bunnies. He and his accomplices had gone to a forest near Paris where they had practiced beheading rabbits as practice for killing human beings. So you can see the problem. At that point in time, all you have really is an animal cruelty charge. They were actually able to pin a terrorism offense on him. They decided that he was an accomplice to this group that was attempting to send young men to Pakistan to wage violence. But he was considered the most junior member of the group, also the youngest. And so he got just a little over 2 years in jail. He's released in 2013. He's under surveillance until the end of 2015. And really just months later is when he committed the latest terror act earlier this month.
So looking back, any real indication, I mean, obviously some twisted torture of animals, but any real indication that an attack against people was imminent?
Well, the evidence that you have is basically the thoughts that he expressed, and those thoughts are expressed through speech. So they had intercepted emails from him that said, I'm hungry for blood and Allah is my witness. He expressed frustration at not being one of the young men who was chosen to go to Pakistan, and then you see his anger turning towards France and him saying that he's going to wipe away the kuffar, meaning wipe away the infidel in France. But there you're up against a society, France, which is not unlike America, where speech is protected. And so the burden for the prosecutors was to try to prove that he wasn't just a deranged young man who was speaking out, because that's, of course, the defense that his lawyer employed, but that he really was going to commit an act of terror. And they weren't able to do that in a definitive way. So he was considered enough of a threat to be locked up for 2 years, but not enough of a threat to be locked up for longer. And hence, he was able to do what he did earlier this month.
We know that authorities are monitoring social media feeds and other communication between suspected terrorists. But then if speech is not something that can be prosecuted, so what gets a follow-up? When do authorities get alerted and start following somebody who says insidious things?
And that's the question. I mean, if you look at the FBI director's comments about Omar Mateen and their investigation that they did in 2013 and 2014, the FBI director says, we did not have reason to hold him then. What I've learned from looking at these people, and in addition to Mateen and in addition to Larossi Abala, there are numerous other terror suspects who have gone on to do acts of terrorism who were being watched. Among them was the Kouachi brothers who did the Charlie Hebdo attack in January of 2015. Amedi Koulibaly, who is one of the first ISIS operatives, he took over a Jewish kosher supermarket in France and killed several people. And Abdelhamid Abaoud, who's the ringleader of the Paris attackers, as well as many of the attackers that took over the Bataclan and the Stade de France. All of these people had dealings with the law. And one of the things that is a hypothesis that I'm exploring is that some of the most dangerous people are the people that get picked up in the very early stages of the radicalization, which seems to have been the case for Omar Mateen in Orlando. He gets picked up at a point in time when he's actually saying very confused things. He's saying that he's got relatives in Al-Qaeda. At the same time, he's talking about Hezbollah, which is a group that is at odds with Al-Qaeda. He gets picked up. He gets interrogated. If he's smart enough, he must have realized things I've said have caused the authorities to come to me. He gets picked up again in 2014, this time because of his casual acquaintance with a man who went on to become a suicide bomber that he met at a mosque in Florida. So at that point, he again realizes, you know, I have to be careful who my friends are. And these people then go underground and they become much better at hiding whatever the warning signs are and come back with vicious and brutal intent to carry out an attack like we've seen here. That was certainly the case for the Quashi brothers who did the Charlie Hebdo attack. They were actually actively under surveillance in January of 2015 when they attacked the offices of the magazine here in France. They had been in and out of jail. They had had previous terrorism charges. And what they did to evade law enforcement is they began communicating on the telephones of their wives. They realized that this is what the law does. The first times that they were arrested, they had their email and their telephone conversations read back to them in court. So they clearly realized, I'm being watched. And they found a means of communicating through two people, their wives, who are not on the terror radar, therefore eluded authorities.
So their strategy changes when they realize that someone's after them. They become even more furtive, I guess. But you describe this situation as looking for needles in a haystack. Once you get hate speech online, authorities are alerted. But is there a sort of hierarchy to the terror watch list? You know, an acknowledgement that some individuals may pose a much more serious threat than others.
In France, this is one of the criticisms of their terror list. So they now have a database of over 10,000 names. It's called La Fiche S, which means the S list, S for security. And what officials here have explained to me is that it's not triaged according to risk. It's sort of like having a Rolodex with 10,000 names without any order to them. Obviously, people here are overwhelmed, and therefore things are slipping through the cracks. One thing we've noticed is ISIS has made very clear that people that are inspired by them in the West, that just about the only requirement for claiming an attack in ISIS's name is to publicly pledge allegiance to the leader of ISIS, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. We know that Omar Mateen did so in his Facebook timeline sometime before the attack. I don't know how soon before the attack, but that's been publicly reported now. That seems to me, if you're following hate speech, that phraseology, I have pledged allegiance to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, however it's said, that seems to me like that would be a phrase that should raise alarms because of what we know about how ISIS functions. And it's the case that Omar Mateen did so on Facebook, and so did the San Bernardino couple.
We're speaking with Rukmini Kalamaki. She's a foreign correspondent for the New York Times, where she covers Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Her article, How Do You Stop a Future Terrorist When the Only Evidence is a Thought?, examines the difficulty of managing terror watch lists and preventing attacks. Well, Rukmini, you mentioned several people who had been on the terror watch list, or La Fiche S in France. How often does that rhetoric turn to action?
Well, not very often. We've had now in Europe, just off the top of my head, around a dozen or so either ISIS-directed or ISIS-inspired attacks. And you have more than 10,000 names just in France. And that's not counting the names in Spain and in Belgium, in the UK, etc. So this is what law enforcement tells us, that they're literally drowning in intelligence. France is saying that this is the most intelligence they've had at any one time in their history, in the history of this republic. And a very small number of them go on to carry out acts of terror. One of the lawyers who's been very involved in defending terror suspects in France, and so who knows these cases very well, he said to me, think about how many times people say, I want to kill my boss. That's practically every day in every office. Now, once in a while, some crazy person will actually go out and carry out an act of vengeance against their employer or against colleagues, as we've seen in mass shootings all over America. How do you differentiate the ones who are just talking from the ones who are going to go out and do that attack? And I think it's not an easy answer.
But once they're on the list, maybe they're under surveillance for a period of time. And as you've just mentioned, you know, they get released, they stop watching them. Is the terror watch list even an effective counterterrorism measure?
I think that officials don't have another one. We're in this new era where so many terror suspects are now back in Europe. We're in a society that very much prizes civil liberties, as it should. And just to give you a counterpoint, in France, one political party, the Republican Party, it's called Les Républicains, the party of former French President Nicolas Sarkozy, they're suggesting creating a new class of administrative detention where they could basically pick up any one of these 10,000 people and just put them behind bars for as long as possible without any sort of judicial procedure. It's been criticized as creating a Guantanamo in France. Mm-hmm. But that's the kind of discussion that is happening here. Most people consider that idea to be absurd, but it's what they're weighing in the face of the fact that we are a society that prizes free speech, you know, and prizes free expression. And oftentimes, the only evidence of what these people are going to do is speech on social media.
What is it that actually triggers the authorities to move from surveillance to actually questioning or detention of a terror suspect?
If they see anything that looks like they are taking steps towards the preparation of an act of terror, for example, I was told by a security source that in Europe right now, he wouldn't tell me which country, but in Europe right now, they're watching a young man who went and bought a large number of ball bearings. Ball bearings is one of the ingredients that is being used in the suicide belts that ISIS is making, which is made from the explosive known as TATP. Mm-hmm. So what they do is they bind this explosive into a vest, and then they put the ball bearings in the vest so that when it explodes, there's these metallic pieces that will essentially hurt people. And he was telling me that it's not illegal to buy ball bearings. It's something that one can buy at any hardware store. But they are watching this man very carefully. He's now got a tail on him. He's got 24-hour surveillance. All of his phones are tapped. And the suspicion is that he's plotting something. Those kind of things are obviously alerts that can let people know that something is about to happen. And the thing that we forget is in America as well as in Europe, yes, there have been these horrific attacks, but what gets much less attention is how many foiled plots there have been. And there have been a lot. In America, there have been, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but there have been a large number of people that have been arrested trying to go to the airport to join ISIS, and others who have been arrested in what the FBI believes were either the early or middle or even the late stages of trying to plot attacks. You know, of course, when 49 people are dead, it's hard to think about that. But there are a lot more things planned than things that succeed.
Well, Rukmini, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
It's my pleasure, Virginia. I hope to be on again.
Rukmini Kalamaki, she's a foreign correspondent for the New York Times, where she covers Al-Qaeda and ISIS. There's a link to read her article, which is truly fascinating. How do you stop a future terrorist when the only evidence is a thought? Link is at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.